The theme for this Yarchikala is Geula, is redemption. So we're going to focus on a specific dimension of Geula, a specific process or theme that is associated with Geula. And before we get started, I want to put something just on your back burner. On your back burner. And that is this Gemara in Brachos on Daf Lamed Dalet on the base, a curious argument. A machlokes, says the Gemara here, it's on the top of page number one in your sources, but it's not part of the sources, it's not number one. It's just for thinking about. Because some of you might have considered this in the past, and I want to re-examine this in a new light today. Keep it in the back of your mind. Reb Chiya bar Abba said the following. Om Rab Yochanan, kol ha-nevi'im kulon lo nisnabu ela labali tshuva. All of the prophets who envisioned rewards, they only envisioned for bali tshuva. For those who are, literally, a bal means an owner of tshuva. Aval tzadikim kumurim, but holy righteous people, with a W, holy righteous, tzadikim kumurim, Ayin lo raso Elokim zulasecha. God, no one except for you has seen the reward for the righteous. All of the amazing descriptions, that's only for Bali Tshuva. But for Tzadikim Gemurim, no one could even envision that. That's so far beyond. That's the first approach. So if you were to take a vote, if you were asking Reb Chiya bar Abba, the name of Yochanan, who is, so to speak, on a higher level, the tzaddikim gemurim, far and away. Upliga, says the Gemara. This argues de Rebbe Abbo, with Rebbe Abbo, who is living around the same time. Because Rebbe Abbo, the Rebbe Abbo said, Makom, the place, shebali tshuva omdim, where bali tshuva, people of tshuva, where they stand, Tzadikim gemurim einam yomodim. The completely righteous people, they can't reach that level. He quotes the pasuk in Yeshaya, Shalom, shalom, l'rachok v'lakarov, l'rachok v'reishim. So this is an interesting debate. Who's greater? Which is higher? We have to figure out if that's really important, why that should be important. Have you ever thought about this? And how could it be that it's greater for somebody to be a Baal Tshuva than to have not had the process of Tshuva in the first place? Like, what exactly is the argument here? This is a well-known passage in the Gemara. It requires some more explanation. But let's put that on the back burner. Let's get to the source of what we really want to talk about today, and that is Geula, redemption. Says the Gemara in Yuma Daf Pei Vav Mid Beis in the first source, Om Reb Yonason. Reb Yonason says, Gedola Tshuva. Tshuva is great. Two different girsos, two different ways of reading the next word. Shem Mikareves. That it hastens, that it brings closer, Es HaGeula, the redemption. Shenemar, as it says in the Pasuk, Uval Tzion Goel, Ulashavei Fesh of Yaakov. It will come to Tzion, the Redeemer, and L'shavei Fesha, for those who return from iniquity within the Jewish people, Biyako. Matam Uvol Tzion Goel? Why is it Uvol Tzion Goel? Why do we have redemption? Bishum, because T'shavei Pesha Biyakov. That the Jews, the Yaakov, us, we return from our Pshaim. How do you understand this Gemara? What does it mean that tshuva precipitates geula? How do we understand that? So what is geula? Why do we need geula? Geula, the Maharal explains, is the opposite of gullus, of exile. So there's something wrong, there's something broken, there's something missing, and we fix that, we mend it, we make it whole, through the process of geula. Every yontif in our davening, we say the same thing, you see it on the page. Because of our errors, we have been exiled from our land, and distanced from our earth, and therefore we can't appear in the Beis Hamikdash, we can't offer karbonos, we can't come close. Golos, the exile, that is a problem, that's a lack, and geula is the fixing, it's returning. So how do we end up in exile? What do we say in the davening? How do we end up with galinu me'artzeinu, exile? Mifnei chata'einu, because of our pshaim, our chata'im. And what do we say? U'lashavei pesha v'yakov, when we mend those sins, when we fix that, u'valutzion goel. Great, right? It's nothing difficult here so far. This is not a trick question. Right? This is just simple understanding. Right? We did something wrong. We need to make amends. We need to fix that. And when we do that, the Ribbono Shel Olam will put us back where we belong. Mipnei chata'einu galinu. And then, l'shavei pesha v'yakov uvol tzion goel. Perfect. I understand this very well. And this is maybe how I was even raised for a very long time. This is maybe what you could call the tshuva we knew. If somebody were to ask you, what is tshuva? How do you define tshuva? So you would probably think to yourself, well, tshuva, it's a process. It's a means of righting a wrong. Right? The word lashuv means to come back. So I come back to God after I ran away from him or threw something at him or rebelled against him. And so we are very familiar with the fact that tshuva has a recipe. This recipe is articulated by the Rambam and others. And there are four steps of this recipe, of this path, of this process, this procedure. It's a procedural matter. There are different opinions as to the order. But what are the four procedural elements of tshuva?
Is this a call-out thing or a Torah question?
Go for it. Yes.
I'm asking you. I have a hard time knowing when teaching preserving rhetorical. As people say, okay, harata, you have vidoy.
Right, vidoy
dvarim. And then as people are leaving. And then,
good.
You're not going to do it again.
Right.
I forgot the Hebrew
over.
Kabbalah.
Lasi. Excellent. All right. And if you didn't follow it in the Hebrew, on your sources, the process is in English. So right there, you have to have aziv zachet. You have to stop doing what you were doing. If you're still doing it, then you haven't returned from that. You haven't fixed it. Number two, you have to have charata. You have to have remorse. Number three, you have to have, according to the Rambam, vidui dvarim. You have to have a verbal acknowledgement. And number four, you have to have kabbalah lahaba. Yoed olav yodea talumas. God has to confirm your conviction. So this is the standard path or process or procedure of tshuva. So we're at the bottom of page one in your Marmakomos. We're familiar with this, right? Great. What is the affect of this tshuva? There's, by the way, an unending amount of literature, of Torah scholarship, of Chidushi Torah, on these four steps, the order, how exactly they fit together. That's not what I want to talk about today. But this is something, not quibbling about the details, this is a process and a procedure that we're very familiar with. But what is the affect that you feel when you go through this process? So the way that the Chayyadam is an important halachic work. He was a mechutin of the Vilna Gaon. So he lived in Vilna in the 18th century. Important Chayyadam. Chayyadam is a very important halachic work. It's like the precursor to the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. My Rabbi Rav Shechter, when he says the way to think about learning halacha, when he says to us, to the students, how you should think about learning halacha, a lot of people jump to learn the Mishnah Berurah. He says, first you should learn the Chayyadam, then you should learn the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, then you should learn the Mishnah Berurah. That's what he told us. So the Chayyadam has a really sharp line that captures a lot of the experience, the visceral response that we have to this process of tshuva. He refers to this, he refers to tshuva and the affect of tshuva with a word, merirus, bitterness.
Why would he think it's bitter?
Well, let's think about that for a second. It's a good question. I'll maybe relate to that with a story. One of the things that I try to do during the Omino run to make my experience in shul meaningful is I usually bring supplemental reading materials, you could call it. Because I don't know where you daven. Sometimes the davening takes a while, and there's some downtime.
Understatement.
So there's an opportunity there to... So I usually bring some stories. So one of the amazing resources that you can bring with you on Yom Run is a collection, originally was published in Hebrew, and now it's in English, by Shai Agnon. So Shai Agnon has a classic compendium called Yamim Noraim. It was published in the 1950s, I think, by Shakin. So you can get it used for, I don't know, a penny or something. It's a very, very kedai thing to keep with you. He collects midrashim and psukim and stories. So I seem to recall, I think this is where I found it, I came across this story. There's a lot of chassidus shemaislach, that there was a chazan in the kloiz, in the shul of the Baal Shem HaKadosh. And this chazan for davening was many years the leader of the congregation during the year, but primarily the highest time of the Yom Ha'Rayim. And he would daven, and everybody would sing with him, and to daven in the presence of the Kaddish, the Baal Shem, it was just an unbelievable experience. And unfortunately, one year, this chazan, this man, this Jew, he lost his way. And he ended up down a path of self-destructive behavior that really... It damaged his neshama in a very, very serious way. And he turns to look at himself at some point in the spring, and he finds himself at some... He left his wife and his children some far from the place, some bar, and even worse. And he had stopped coming to shul, and everything, he was so, so far. And he finally hit rock bottom, and he looked at himself, and he realized this was no life that he wanted for himself. So he started slowly, slowly to come back, to rebuild his spiritual self. And lo and behold, it comes around Elul time. So the Jews in the clothes of the Baal Shem are trying to figure out, so who's going to be the chazan for Yom Ha'Rayim? So the Baal Shem didn't want to answer, didn't say. But this chazan, he just started coming back to shul. Nobody wanted to ask him to daven. And it comes Rosh Hashanah in the morning, and the people in the know still weren't clear who was actually going to stand up and say HaMelech, who's going to daven for the Amid. And they had a chazan for Psuki de Zimra, and he gets toward the end of Nishmas, and in the back of the shul is sitting this old chazan, this Jew, who in bygone years had been preparing, waiting with anticipation to breathe that word, HaMelech, in front of the Baal Shem, in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam, on the Yom HaKadosh and Rosh Hashanah. And just as the Chazan for Psuki de Zimra finishes that last sentence and falls silent, the entire shul, everyone heard the most painful, gut-wrenching, profound groan. Oy! That came from the back of the shul. A sob that came from this broken Jew who felt the pain of losing everything that really mattered to him. And at that moment, the Baal Shem Tov turned around and he said to the Gabbai, please ask him to come down. So that's a powerful story of tshuva. And that captures some of the merirus, I think, that we relate to when we go through this process of tshuva. And it's intense, and it could be very heavy. And depending on who the person is, and where they've been, and what they've, ain't tzadik b'aretz asher asa tov lo yechta, that could be very sharp. We could get to that point. But I would say if we take a step back for a second, everything that we've been talking about now is the tshuva that we knew, and that the world knew in many respects. But in the 1920s, something changed. Something happened. And even though the tshuva that we knew remained, but a new tshuva, a new light on tshuva was revealed. So if you turn the page, we are introduced to the Sharblat, the opening page of a small pamphlet. Potzos Yerushalayim, you see it is Yud Zayin Prakim, 17 chapters. Oros HaTshuva, the light of tshuva, Me'es from Rabbeinu Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk Shlita. When is this published? Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Rosh Shnas, Tov Resh Pei Hei. So this is in the fall of 1924. Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk, chief rabbi of the modern settlement of Israel, Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Merkazita Olamit, Rav Kook publishes this manuscript, this monograph on Tshuva. Now, Rav Kook himself actually did not publish this work. This work was collated and published by his son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook. Rav Tzvi Yehuda collected writings of Rav Kook and pasted them together to form this treatise called Oros HaTshuva. The first three chapters of Oros HaTshuva were written in order, in full length, by Rav Kook himself, with an introduction, which we're going to get to in a minute. And then the rest of the chapters, the other 14 chapters, are selections that Rav Kook had entered into his diaries and various other places over the span of several years. Some of them have been written when Rav Kook was living in Israel, in Yafo, before the First World War. Some of them were written in Rav Kook's personal diary when he was in Switzerland, when he was in England, because during the First World War he was on the run outside of Israel before he returned. Some of them were written, but they were scattered all around, and Rav Tzvi Yehuda collected them. So in the first three chapters, when you study Mirtz Hashem one day, Keseder, Oros HaTshuva, you'll see the first three chapters flow one into the next. The later chapters are introduced in bullet point form with letters. Aleph is section one, Beis is piece two, Gimel is piece three. It's actually, there are many, many editions of Oros HaTshuva. I'll just show you in this edition where you could see how the way that it is organized is by paragraph, and each paragraph has a letter, because they were not written in this order, but Rav Tzvi Yehuda organized them according to the theme of the chapter. So there are 17 chapters. The first three Rav Kook wrote in order, so there are no numbers. There are no Aleph, Beis, Gimel. And then the next one, this is Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, He, Vav, Zion. Some of them are a little bit longer, you see. Some of them are shorter, but they are what we could call piskaot, little pieces. And Rav Kook, he decided that it was important to write about tshuva, specifically in our day, he's writing, in our time, and he was wondering, how should he approach it? And he writes the introduction, if you look on the bottom of your page, Ze kama ani nilcham milchama pnimis veruach chazaka dochefes osi ledaber al dvar hatshuva. This has been for a while. I've had this inner pang, this strong force which has been pushing me to speak about the issue of tshuva. The whole rayon osai, and all of my thoughts, the man who is building institutions and dealing with the needs of the Jewish people as a whole, both in Israel and around the world, and is writing responsa, and is writing poetry, and commentaries on the Gemara, and says, I'm obsessed with tshuva. Hatshuva, and look at this line, he tofeses, tshuva captures, Es hachelik hayoser godol batorah. The largest chunk of Torah is occupied by tshuva. Ubachayim, and in life. The predominant feature of life, says Rav Kook, is tshuva. Allah on it, benuyos kol hatikvos ha'ishios va'atziburios. On tshuva is built all of the personal and communal hopes. He mitzvahs Hashem, it is the commandment of Hashem, she mitzad echa, that is from one side, kalos shebekalos, the easiest of the easy. Share, hear her tshuva, bukvar tshuva, the thought of tshuva is tshuva. Umitzad echad, hari yikashe shebekashios. It is the most difficult of difficult, shalom yotza adayin elapo b'maloa ba'olam v'chayim. It has not yet been revealed. So Rav Kook says, I have to talk about tshuva. Because the way that it's been talked about until now, of course, he writes in the introduction, there are so many great tzaddikim and talmidei chachamim and gaonim who have written about tshuva, but he says, I think, especially in our generation, there's something else. There's another way of understanding this. And I need to talk about it. But what is it that he's talking about? Because if you were to ask anyone who's familiar with tshuva, with the tshuva we knew, the steps, the procedure that we talked about, does that occupy the majority of Torah? Does that occupy the plurality of a person's life and existence? And what does that have to do with the tzibur, the community, or the nation? Rav Kook is talking about tshuva from a different perspective. It's a new definition. It's a new way of understanding tshuva. And it's not a way of tshuva which rejects the tshuva we knew. It encompasses it, but it is much, much broader. And it's difficult even to grasp. Rav Kook describes himself in the introduction in words. He says, on the one hand, it's so lofty that I want to share it. On the other hand, to constrict it to the language and the vocabulary that I'm going to find in this book, in these words, is doing it an injustice. So we'll do the best that we can. Rav Kook says in Perakid Beis, in Osches, says the following: Hatshuva biyisoda. Tshuva at its source, he tnuah. It's not in the Bar Mikomos. We'll get to that in a minute. It is a tnuah. It is a movement. Lashuv el hamakorius. To return to the source. Or, makorius is not just source. Makor is the source. Makorius is the being of source. It is the movement toward the source. Maybe one way of taking that down even further, away from it itself, is a way to maybe understand it for us. Lamashal, this movement could also be understood as a way. Or, let's say like this. I don't understand so much about what I'm about to describe, and I'm not just talking about tshuva, but this phenomenon. There's something called, apparently in the world, a lifestyle brand. There's such a thing. I've heard about this. There's such a thing. So let's say a lifestyle brand. I think it's generally mostly associated with clothing, but it could also be with other things. So let's say you have a lifestyle brand. I don't have any articles of clothing that belong to this lifestyle brand, but I'm familiar that there is such a thing. They're different companies. They make different brands. So let's say there's a jogging pants brand, Lululemon, right? There's pants like this. Shorts, t-shirts, jackets, handbags, Echveis. Then there's a brand Coach. I don't know, do they make pants? I don't know if they make pants or shoes.
I think they just do purses and shoes.
Okay, Echveis, whatever.
I think.
A person who purchases a sweatshirt from the Lululemon company, why do they purchase this sweatshirt than any other sweatshirts? I'm sure I'm not judging anybody's sweatshirt taste. And the fabric is very nice fabric, and it fits a certain way. It doesn't rumple, and it doesn't this, and it stays in the machine, and whatever. I'm not getting involved in that. But the ASIC, why is it such a thing? Because when you buy the particular Lululemon, the sweatpants, and then the shirt, you're not just wearing a shirt. You're buying into a lifestyle brand. That's what all the marketers tell them. That's why they're getting paid millions of dollars on Madison Avenue to convince you. So once you have the sweatshirt and the sweatpants, then you also have to have the water bottle, which is the same Taiwanese-made water bottle that you can get in the dollar store. But no, this is not that water bottle. This is the Lululemon water bottle. And then with the water bottle comes the socks, the sport socks, you know what I'm talking about? Or the, I don't know, whatever else they have. This is not my ASIC. But what are they trying to sell? That when you wear this clothing, it reflects something about you. It's not about the clothing. It's about your identity. It's about the messaging that you want to share. It's about a style. It's about a mood or a destiny. I'm that kind of, you know, exercise person. Mrs. Greenland is looking at me thinking, you don't exercise enough. Dr. Greenland told me that, so don't talk about exercise. I'm just saying Le Marshall. You know what I'm saying? It's true. I have too much challenge. But I'm saying, imagine if I were such a person to understand that. That's what they're selling. The objects, they're just objects. That's not what draws people to buy them. What draws people to buy them is that when you carry this purse or this bag that has the little clutch, that has a certain clutch or whatever it's called, something that conveys a message that says something about you. And therefore, all of these things, they are telling your story. And that story is what they call a lifestyle brand. So that means that you wear a certain thing that affects what you wear. It also affects how you eat and how you speak and what you do and what kind of activities you're interested in. Because this is your lifestyle brand. And so when they post pictures in the stores in the gigantic windows of a particular lifestyle brand, they all fit into a certain collection. And they're all doing the same kinds of activities that I'm not engaged in regular. So I don't want to be caught too much in this muscle because I don't know so much about it. But the idea that a person lives in an ecosystem which is about identity and it's about a way of life more than just particular elements is another way of understanding a different perspective on tshuva. Whereas the tshuva that we knew is a specific procedure, it's a process, it's a path, you could imagine redefining the word tshuva as a lifestyle brand, which is something which is totally pervasive. And so in this mashal will be the way that you comport yourself, the kind of activities that you do, the way that you project, the way that you act, the way that you think, as opposed to being monochrome, it's technicolor. It includes this path, but it means many more things. Because the definition now of tshuva is a movement toward Hashem. A movement specifically toward the source. The Ribbono Shel Olam is Ilas HaIlos. He's the source of all sources, of each one of us individually and the Klal as a whole. So this definition of tshuva, the same way that a lifestyle brand includes many different things, it includes the specific path, that step that the Rambam gave us of 1, 2, 3, 4. But that's only one part of it. It's how did we wake up? And who are we? And what are we about? And how do we see the world? In this light, if tshuva is about a movement toward the source, to the Ribbono Shel Olam, then actually, with that definition, it makes sense why Rav Kook thinks that tshuva occupies the largest space in a person's religious, spiritual, and meaningful life. That's what life is all about. Journeying, moving toward the Ribbono Shel Olam, which you could express visually with your hands as moving up, or you could also express it as moving in. It also, of course, now is understandable how this movement toward the source of all source, it relates to the tzibor, not just the individual. It relates to all of existence, that Hashem Yisbarach created the world with a purpose, and that this existence in which we live is on a journey. It has a destiny of purpose. Purpose with a capital P. So that movement toward purpose, that is tshuva. Tshuva can be described in many different ways in this light of Rav Kook, which is part of the challenge sometimes of learning Rav Kook, is that his language and his ideas are so ethereal. But this idea that within the entire existence there is a source, we could call it even a light, which is the way that the Baalei Kabbalah refer to Hashem as the Or Ein Sof, endless light. Well, as that light, if Hashem is the light of the world, as that light appears more and more on the horizon, so we feel warmer. Things become brighter and clearer, and they feel like things that maybe were confused or distant become together. In going through the different pieces, skim through almost all of Oros HaTshuva, in thinking about how to convey such a complex and ethereal idea, I would maybe give you 10 different frames. Tshuva is a force. It's a force that drives all of existence toward its ideal. So on the one hand, it's a force. It's also an energy. Right? Energy is very difficult to define. What is energy? Energy. Tshuva is an energy that excites, that innervates. Tshuva is a light that clarifies. Tshuva is a motion. It is a motion that strives upward. Tshuva, Rav Kook uses the phrase, tshuva is a wave that washes over. It's a beautiful image. Right? Each of these images helps fill out the picture of what is tshuva. It's a force, it's an energy, it's a light, it's a motion, it's a wave. For Rav Kook, tshuva is also a feeling. It's specifically a feeling of health. It's a feeling of health.
Like mental health?
Right. All health. All health. Mm-hmm. In the beginning of Oros HaTshuva, Rav Kook talks about tshuva gufonis, physical tshuva, a person being physically well. He talks about emotional, psychological well-being. And then he talks about religious well-being, spiritual well-being. But at the baseline, Rav Kook is talking about physical health, actual physical health, all joking aside from before. That's Rav Kook, interestingly, understands that physical health is part of tshuva. Which, if you understand that this existence that the Rosh Hashanah gave us is meant to be a path toward Makorius, how can a person do that if their physical vessel with which they were given to operate, they're not caring for it carefully? Physical health is included. So it's a feeling, it's a vision. It is a vision of your best self, of the world and its ideal. It's the vision of the ultimate existence. It's a pull. We could describe tshuva as a pull that pulls down barriers. It removes barriers between, and just fill in the blank, between who and whom. It is a sense of joy, a sense of joy which comes from wholeness and an authentic self. And tshuva is freedom. Freedom from limitations. Whether these limitations are imposed by our parents, by our society, by narratives, and by physicality, by the Olam HaGashmi. These are very lofty ways of all describing different aspects of this technicolor image that Rav Kook wants to paint for us of tshuva, which is broad and has lots of different emotions and colors and experiences. And so even though it is very ethereal, all of these 10 different definitions are very theoretical or abstract, it's also very personal. In Perek Tesvav, if you look on the top of the next page, Rav Kook talks about how it relates to us individually, because this relates to me, these two different processes of tshuva. Right, the tshuva we know says, I made a mistake, I need to fix it. It's very narrow and it's limited to a set of actions that I need to take, not just for things that I did, but also for thoughts that I had, machshavas. But for Rav Kook, it's much broader. The definition of tshuva includes that, but it's really, the definition of tshuva on a personal level is my inner connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, my inner return, coming back to the Makorius, to the neshama, the spark that is within. Okay, before I get to this piece of Orza Chuva, you had a question or comment before.
I had a comment about lifestyle brand. We
yes.
all live a lifestyle brand. You wear a kippah from God. That says something about you. The people who wear the hats says something about you. So we all do that.
Of course. Absolutely. Okay, take a look at this piece so we can try to bring this, start to try to bring it a little more personal, lemaisa, hopefully. Says Rav Kook something that, at least when you look at the traditional sources on tshuva, you wouldn't have necessarily thought of this. But Rav Kook says, what is, remember we started, mepnecha to'enu golinu me'arzenu, what is the opposite of the ideal? It's chet, it's lack, which of course Rav Kook talks a lot. But he associates that with a fascinating phenomenon called forgetting. Kishishochem, when we forget, es mahus haneshama ha'atzmis. When we forget about the essential essence of our soul, of who we are deep down, of our identity, of our makorius. Kishimisichim dea mila histakel. When we become distracted from looking betochius hachaim apnimim shel atzmo, in our inner self of who and what I am, who am I, what am I, when I get distracted from that, then all of a sudden hakol nasim ur bav umesupak, everything becomes confused, ambiguous. Vahatshuva harashis, and the main thing shemiira es hamachshakim o miad, that illuminates the darkness immediately. When you do tshuva, where are you returning to? Says Rav Kook, you're returning to yourself, to ourselves. What is our shoresh? El, to whom? El shoresh nishmaso, to the source of our neshama. Umiyad, immediately that source, yashiv el ho elokim, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, el nishmas kol haneshamos. And then we will proceed, hala, mila, mila. And that's true, says Rav Kook, bein be'ish yechidi, whether it is an individual, bein ba'am shalem. It's not just the process of fixing the broken. That's part of this. But it's a much bigger process of coming back to the deepest part of ourselves, to who we really are. Who am I? And cutting through all of the chatter and the noise and the distractions and the narratives that other people have and the labels. And so if a person lives in harmony with their inner selves, if that's their lifestyle, so tshuva is their lifestyle brand. And that affects how they think about themselves, how they live. Everything about us is affected by this. So now, what's the nafkamina? What would you say? And now there are going to be many. What's the nafkamina between the tshuva that we knew and the new light of tshuva? What's the nafkamina between the tshuva that we knew, those specific steps, versus the new light of tshuva of Rav Kook? So one way of thinking about this is the nafkamina of the feeling, the affect, that it's true. There's a little part of tshuva for Rav Kook that has an element of merirus, of sadness, of brokenness, when we have to come face to face with those barriers between us and Hashem, the places that we fell short, the things, those black spots, the dirty, you know, those like very hard to scrub off at the bottom of the pan when the challen sat a little too long. So that hurts a little bit. In the tshuva that we knew, it's really focused on that. And it's searing. It's the mariris of going through those four steps to the point where the person is so in touch with their inner self that they're mamish committed. But for Rav Kook, it's more than that. And I would say proportionally, Rav Kook describes that as being a very small part of this much bigger picture. And so yes, maybe there's a tiny pinch. There's the prick at the beginning of the process of tshuva, but that's not the affect of tshuva. There is a magnificent set of svarim that capture some of the light of Oras HaTshuva, which is being revealed in our generation, by Mori V'Rabbi Rav Moshe Weinberger Shlita. Rav Weinberger, for 7 years in his community in Woodmere, in Shul in Esh Kodesh, was teaching Oras HaTshuva. Someone came along and published his shiurim, sichus, his discussions, in this book called Song of Tshuva. I think there are 4 volumes. They're available wherever fine books are sold. Also online. Song of Tshuva, a commentary on Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook's Oras HaTshuva by Rav Moshe Weinberger, adapted by Yaakov David Shulman. Rav Weinberger takes the teachings of Rav Kook and brings them much closer to us, makes them much more accessible to the average person. And so here he describes in English this nafkamina about the affect of tshuva. Thus, Rav Kook revealed, you see this is on page 14, it's under Marma Kombelson number 6, Rav Kook revealed the true inner light of tshuva, and in doing so proclaimed, tshuva does not come to embitter life, but to sweeten it. And the sweetness of life that comes about through tshuva emerges from all those waves of bitterness in which the soul is embroiled when it takes the first steps upon the path of the life of tshuva. He also states how great and elevated is the happiness of tshuva. The scorching fire of the pain caused by sin refines a person's will. It purifies his character with a supernal and shining purity until the great wealth in the treasury of the life of tshuva unfolds before him. This person is continuously elevated by tshuva, by its bitterness and by its pleasantness, by its grief and by joy. Nothing purges and purifies a person, raising him to the true stature of a human being as does his immersion in tshuva. Says Weinberger, the light of tshuva dispels the dark shadows of an unhealthy life and restores man to a state of true well-being and joy. Tshuva, says Rav Kook, is the healthiest feeling of the spirit. Tshuva is a feeling of happiness. It's that good feeling about yourself. It's that healthy feeling when you're breathing clean air. It's when you're maybe on a physical level, you're feeling healthy. Maybe you did a little bit of exercise, you ate something that was healthy, or you had a chance to clear your head a little bit. You're emotionally in a good place. It's that feeling of inner joy. That is the feeling of tshuva. That's the nafkamina. To know whether or not you're in the tshuva that we knew, which is important but limited, or the new light of tshuva. Do you feel like you're feeling better about things as you go through this process? That you're feeling better about yourself, that you're seeing greater clarity, that you're feeling these types of feelings. Here's another interesting nafkamina. Now the Rambam says that there are chaf dalad ma'akvim es ha-tshuva. There are 24 things that impede tshuva. The Rambam lists off what they are. Now, even the Rambam might agree to the following statement, but the Rambam sets it out that these are chaf dalad varm ha-ma'akvim es ha-tshuva. They impede tshuva. So that gives us barriers, that puts up these walls. But Rav Kook writes in Perek Yudalid, in the letter Gimel, he says, "Ain shum maniyah b'davar." He says, the truth is, there's no impediment of tshuva. Even the 24 things that the Rambam says impede tshuva, they don't really impede tshuva. And I don't think Rav Kook means to be arguing with the Rambam. He's saying it could be that in this narrow channel of tshuva, they do stand as an impediment. But in the broader sense of tshuva, of being in the process, the movement toward Hashem, toward the Makorius, nothing can stand in that way. Maybe this is why. Now we can understand why the Gemara says, why the Medrash says, the bottom in source number 7, Toshev enosha daka vatom reshuva b'nei adam. Amr Rabbi Abo bar Zeira, gedola tshuva, shekadma lebrias olam. Tshuva preceded creation. So what does that mean? Tshuva preceded creation. If you understand that the definition of tshuva is fixing the broken, well, before creation existed, there was nothing broken. What does it mean that tshuva preceded creation? So you might tell me, and I think this is certainly a pshat, tshuva preceded creation because the Ribbono Shel Olam knew that our world would be an alma de piruda, a world of fragmentation, an alma de shikra, a world of lies, and that there would be mistakes. And the only way we could survive is by having the tool of tshuva in our back pocket. So he gave us this tool, and he says, go out and live. Without that tool of fixing, which transcends human existence, you know, in physical terms, you can't mend what happened in the past. The past was. But tshuva, it's kadma l'olam, it transcends time. So it's a tool. The way to view tshuva in the first approach, the tshuva we knew, is that tshuva is a tool. It's like a kardum. It's an axe. Sometimes it hurts. It's exhausting. So you needed that tool to get through life. Tshuva is kadma l'olam. But in the way that Rav Kook is teaching us that there is a new light of tshuva, in the new light of tshuva, tshuva is not a tool. Tshuva is the movement of light being more and more increasing in the world. It's the more ruchnius, it's the destiny of the world unfolding. So that's what it means, tshuva kadma l'olam, meaning tshuva, which is this eternal light within all of existence, it's the movement toward perfection, that's where recreation began. The story of all of existence, from the moment of Bria Sa'olam until the ultimate tikkun, that's one long unfolding of tshuva. Because tshuva is not a tool to fix brokenness. Tshuva is, it's a movement toward the source. So anything that exists from the time that the Ribbono Shel Olam kivyachol had a ratzon to create the world is ultimately coming back to create that world. And maybe now we can understand the first source that we started with in a new light. We ask, why is it that tshuva uvolitzion gol ulishavi peshav Yaakov? Why is it that tshuva brings geula? So the first answer we said, based on the first understanding, is that we have a broken world, so we take the tool of tshuva and we piece together those broken pieces, and now we have geula, we have wholeness. But for Rav Kook, tshuva is not a tool that facilitates geula. Tshuva is the process of geula. The process of tshuva, the process of the unfolding of the light of existence, of Hashem's light in our world, that is geula. Geula is the clarity, the ruchnius of the essence of humanity, of all of existence. The more that that is apparent, the more we have geula, the more we have tshuva. It's not that one leads to the other, it's that, in a certain sense, geula is synonymous with tshuva. And maybe now we can suggest, you don't have to accept this because the Gemara says upliga, they're definitely arguing, so I'm not saying they're not arguing, but maybe in this light we can understand how you can have a machlokas amorayim of who's greater. Who's greater? The Baal Tshuva or the Tzadik Gamor? I don't understand. Shouldn't that be obvious? So in the first approach of tshuva, that tshuva is a tool. So of course, if the purpose of that tool is to fix the brokenness, well, it's better not to have had the brokenness in the first place. So of course, the Tzadik Gamor is greater. But maybe what we can suggest now is that they're not actually arguing. Because yes, from that perspective, the Tzad HaGomer is greater. But if you understand that tshuva is the movement toward the source, it's the revelation of the light within, personally, communally, nationally, and in all of existence, well, the more that a person illuminates that process of becoming a greater and greater source of illumination, that could certainly be greater than somebody who is a Tzadik Gamor, who's at their level. Maybe that's the alternative, that we're thinking of Baal Tshuva wrong. We think of Baal Tshuva, especially in a colloquial sense, we think of Baal Tshuva as somebody who was last week eating at Arby's and driving on Shabbos, then they went to, you know, some seminar where they became inspired, they came back to their Yiddishkeit, and now they're Shomer Shabbos. Now they only eat at the kosher Dunkin' Donuts. Right? So that's what a Baal Tshuva is. So of course it would have been better if they never ate that Dvar Ma'amitam to Misalev in the first place. But if that's not the definition of a Baal Tshuva, the definition of a Baal Tshuva is a person whose lifestyle brand is the movement toward the source, to the neshama of all neshamas, to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Well, that person is the highest person. That's the highest level. So my hope is today that we now have a totally new way of thinking about tshuva and how it applies to our life. But what does this mean, Lamaisa? What are you going to do with this? So I think one thing that we can do practically, and it's beautiful that, watch out, but it's about to be Elul in a few minutes, is that we can realize that our thoughts are very important in the world of tshuva. It's interesting that Rav Kook has two chapters in Oris HaTshuva. One is on Hirhurei Tshuva, thoughts of tshuva, and on the role of Ratzon, desire, motivation, want in tshuva. If a person has this lifestyle brand of tshuva, that it shapes the way that we are and the way that we think about ourselves, so then that thinking is also part of tshuva, right? You can do tshuva, you can be a Baal tshuva, you can pursue tshuva without having to go through all the steps, right? The Rambam said, if you don't do vidui tefarim, it's not. That's true for that. That's what we could call the tshuva we knew, the Yom Kippur tshuva, which we need to do. But all year round, we could continue to pursue the lifestyle brand of tshuva, the light of tshuva, and that can exist in your mind. So the Gemara says in Kiddushin that there's a story. A man, he sits next to a woman on a train station, at a bus, and he says to her, Hareya mekudeshesli amanash ani tzadik. You are betrothed to me on the condition that I am a tzadik. He pulls out $10 from his wallet, and he hands it to her. And she's thinking, okay, if he's a tzadik, it's kedai. So the Gemara says, maybe it works. Ah, you know, he's a gangster from the south side, from the descendants of Al Capone. Whereas he's don't worry. Maybe I'd hear Hurei Tshuva. What do you mean he had Hurei Tshuva? Thoughts of Tshuva. The Rambam said, you need 1, 2, 3, 4 steps of Tshuva. Without those 4 steps, that's not Tshuva. The answer is, there are other kinds of Tshuva. There are other aspects of Tshuva. We should realize that every moment that we have a hearer to do something right, to nurture that makorius, that source within us, that's also tshuva. The minute we set goals for ourselves in ruchnius, in spirituality, that's hirurei tshuva. That's the ratzon. So I think this is a takeaway that we can use. To realize that to be bali tshuva, at that highest level that even tzadikim kemurim can't exist, it can happen in our mind. It can happen when we wake up in the morning and we say moda'ani, thinking, what does it mean to have the Ribbono Shel Olam in our lives? It could be when we keep a journal of what's going to be this coming year, and we write something down during Elul. It could be a thought that we entertain every time we go to sleep at night. But to realize that we have the koach hatshuva, and not to be scared off because of the meriras, the pain, and the difficulty, and the challenges of the path of the tshuva that we knew, but to expand our mind, to open ourselves up to new ways to grow through this light of tshuva, perhaps something that we can take away on a practical level.